Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I don't want to grow up. I'm a Toys R Us kid. Wah wah. So I'm Danielle Riendo, and this is Three Point Radio.
That was the cold open. That was it.
Episode 142.
You didn't. Okay.
That was my cold open. Did you like it?
Normally,
it seems like you liked it.
An article.
Was there more to the song?
We usually start with an article, but this, I felt this was more appropriate.
What are the rest of the lyrics to that song?
Oh, well, I know the inappropriate
lyrics. They've been sold in liquidation. We don't have the rest of the lyrics.
Oh,
they're
no.
gone. They're gone. All that remains is that first part of the song.
Bain Capital, like, sold them in a debt packaging deal.
I didn't realize that Bain Capital was the one handling liquidation. There is something, okay.
Well, like, the whole thing is tied up in weird, like, hyper-capitalism, like, packaged risk shit, isn't it?
It sure is. And we're going to dive right into that here in Waypoint Radio, episode 142. Of course, you've heard the voices of Rob Zachney.
Hey, what's up, everybody?
Patrick Klepek.
Financial expert Patrick Klepek here to explain the bankruptcy crisis facing Toys R Us.
And Austin Walker.
That's me. There's an ad playing on this CNN Money page that I'm trying to read currently, and it's interrupting my Toys R Us nostalgia, goddammit.
Oh.
It stopped. We're good now.
So, all right. I guess we should explain what happened here. All right. So there's the Bain Capital element. There is Toys R Us going into liquidation. There's a lot going on here. Does anyone who has followed this very closely care to explain? Patrick, you are the financial expert here. What the fuck happened to Toys R Us?
I mean, the short version is that Amazon.
Amazon, right?
Toys R Us, like, you know, didn't really position themselves to handle the rise of e-commerce, and at some point just got too far behind the eight ball on that, and then combined with that. They actually kind of came under siege by, like, smaller, more boutique toy places. They didn't make a pivot really to making it, like, easy to, like, play and interact with toys in a way that they started getting eaten on both ends. And I mean, certainly the e-commerce it was more responsible for sort of the beginning of the end for Toys R Us. But, like, they really were being hit from multiple fronts. And so last year, there were a number of stores that were going out of business. It wasn't the entire, like, 100-plus Toys R Us places across the country, including one of them was, like, the one closest to me. And I've been going there every couple of weeks, like, wondering when, like, I obviously feel terrible for, like, the 30,000 workers that are losing their jobs.
It's
also
a lot of,
like,
people. That's, like, a lot of people.
It's a huge, the decline in, like, retail jobs is, like, an undercovered, like, part of, like, things that have been happening in an otherwise, like, okay-ish, like, improving economy. But, like, retail is, like, not doing particularly well. So, yeah, there was a couple dozen stores, I want to say, that were going under. And then recently, like, the thought was, like, oh, those will go under. Maybe we can sell the rest of the stores or blah, 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 blah. And basically whatever they were attempting to do didn't work out. They are now closing every Toys R Us realtor. They're liquidating all the inventory. It's going to mean, like, the loss of, I believe, around 30,000 retail jobs in the next 60 days.
No job and no severance. That's the headline, it looks like, on CNN Money. 31,000 jobs, no job and no severance. That's
well, they have no money, right? Like, so the right. You know, the way liquidation works, when Bain Capital comes in, you know, those firms, the money goes to the shareholders, the debt holders, like the last people that goes to are the workers that make the whole thing work.
So that was the thing that I was getting at, actually, in the intro, not just the general notion of consumerism and commercialism, but that, like, Toys R Us was like $5 billion in debt. And each year, all it was able to do with its you know, profit was try to keep that debt paid down. It was paying down $400 million in interest payments alone each year.
God.
And so, like, it didn't
have
capital.
That's not how you get out of debt.
It's not how you get out of debt. If you're paying $400 million in interest. And my understanding is that there was also some degree of, like, the larger company of investors that ran Toys R Us just kind of mishandling some of that stuff. On top of the money it was hemorrhaging, there were, like, more loans were being piled onto it, and it was kind of being kicked around in terms of, like, it was a place to, like, move money a little bit. Like, oh yeah, Toys R Us, we'll just put it in Toys R Us, that sort of thing. And that didn't help. You know, and again, I think the core thing is definitely what y'all got to, which is, like, the internet and boutique retailers really, really chomped up their business. But, you know, Wall Street is just going to do what Wall Street does.
Well, and we're seeing this happen a lot this week in media as well, right? Like, right now, there's major layoffs going on at Trunk.
Excuse me, what was that? Can we, just in case people don't know what that means, because...
It's actually the name for Luigi's dick.
Yep,
oh, my
Trunk.
God.
And is 4 inches flaccid? That's what we came down on here? Or
how did we? We're so far away from Luigi's dick. How did we?
I don't think we are.
Austin, are we though?
I don't think we are.
Depends on how big it is. It's the only answer, because if it's really big, we're not that far.
What if the universe is actually Luigi's dick?
I just. Can we talk about Toys R Us?
It's like a tree trunk.
Yeah.
Toys R Us? They sell tree trunks?
They should. If they sell Luigi Amiibo.
It's a children's toy store.
Trunk owns a bunch of newspapers. They own the Chicago Tribune. The Tribune just got hit with a bunch of layoffs a couple days ago.
And they're still better than Zell, by the way. They're still better than Sam Zell.
Fair. But they're also called Trunk, which is the funniest name of anything ever.
Denver Post got hit with, like, a huge amount of layoffs earlier this week.
But both of those stories
are not because they are financially insolvent. It's just because money people are coming in and, like, finding ways to make more money, as opposed to, like, oh shit, like it's not part of the larger media narrative of, like, media is doing bad. Like, we got to do whatever we can to keep this solvent. It's like, nah, like, Denver Post was, like, making, like, something like $30 million a year. They didn't need to shave off a bunch of fucking jobs.
Nope.
Sorry, Rob, you were introducing that point though.
No, I mean, that was basically it, though, was that, like, there's always an element of, well, this company didn't change with the times. It's a tough market out there for these sort of old-fashioned companies representative of an old form of the economy. But that really lets off the hook the fact that, like, in a lot of cases, it's almost like capital laundering, right?
Yeah.
Like, you are taking assets or profits out of a business that is succeeding, or at least is solvent and sustainable, to finance other potentially higher yield bets somewhere else. And in return, you're taking the old business and, in a lot of cases, like, loading it up with debt. And then, again, it's sort of like having – you're sort of treating the company like a credit card, right? And you're running up the debt on that. But at the end of the day, you can always liquidate that company and declare bankruptcy. And all the material assets have been transferred out. So I think that's another element of a lot of this, is that – a lot of this stuff looks inevitable from the way, you know, the economy and the world is moving, but it's not as inevitable as stories often make it out to be.
Yeah, right. There was a really great tweet that encapsulates a lot of this. It was Julie Muncy was tweeting about this whole thing, and she wrote, "Imagine trying to explain to your kids that the toy store is gone because some rich people used it to erase their own debt." Like, it's a very, like... Oh, yeah, you know, the sort of hard line that people usually use for, you know, the sort of libertarian dream or the free market is like, oh, yes, you know, you work hard, you have a successful business, you'll do well, and that's beautiful, and it's the marketplace. And it's like, no, actually, there's so many loopholes for rich people to basically use these things as they will. And you know, of course, who always gets screwed is the folks on the bottom.
Is the 31,000 people who aren't
getting,
right.
Exactly.
Uh-huh, yeah. It's great. It's fantastic.
It is a crappy toy store, though.
Like, yeah,
I haven't been it used to be.
I haven't been in a long time
at Toys R Us. Actually,
really,
yeah. As a teenager,
what did you do?
So I was just sort of like holiday help. You know, they used to staff up around you know, October, November,
right.
December, and I was just sort of one of those scrubs. And it was actually in 2001, so it was right after 9/11 that I was working in Toys R Us, which was a hell of a time. To be working at a Toys R Us. It was very interesting because the pitch that I was given when I sort of, you know, applied, I was a senior in high school, was like, oh, a lot of parents really want to give their kids a nice, extra nice Christmas because the world is really scary right now. That was like the pitch I was given, mm-hmm. which is very interesting looking back on that, especially I was a kid, you know, I was 17 at the time. And yeah, so what I did was I mostly cleaned up aisles and put things where they should have been and helped people like find the right toys. There was a lot of really weird and interesting things about Toys R Us. There was like a very gendered like boys and girls section, but because it was corporate, they had to call it like action adventure and then like pretty princesses or whatever. I forget what the girl, you know, quote unquote girls section was actually called, but it was called something like, you know. Basically, it was the girls section that nobody called the girls section because corporate would get mad at you, but it was really like the most gendered bullshit ever in the universe.
Of course.
And then, of course, there was like the science and discovery section, which had the Legos and also the sciencey toys and also the craft toys. It was an interesting time. It was a very interesting and weird retail job. This is also during the time where the GameCube had just come out. It came out like during November, I think. So during that time, so I worked in the video game section for a little while, like ringing people up, you know, doing cashier work. And I remember ringing up many a GameCube when we sort of had them in stock. So I remember the rushes for that sort of thing. It was a weird and interesting experience working at Toys R Us.
It sounds like it,
for sure. So I guess we can talk if we're done talking about the shitty capitalist part of this, which we don't have to be. I'm never done with that. I guess there's also the happier side of Toys R Us. I mean, I personally have a lot of fond memories of going to Toys R Us. I don't know if you guys went to Toys R Us.
I was more of a slips of paper. Those slips of paper. I'm all about those slips of paper.
Oh my god.
Yeah, that's like a pretty early like. I did good on my report card. I'm going to get a game. Like, mm-hmm. my dad's going to take me to Toys R Us. I got straight A's. Like, all right, you got to decide. Like, there was one of the interesting things about Toys R Us in general, or like that sort of toy shopping and game shopping for me as a kid, was that there was always a sort of like, you got to be an informed consumer, like aspect to it, where my dad was like, you can get one game. Like, you go look at the wall, you go look at the back of all the boxes or whatever. And then you pick that slip out and then you bring it up front and, you know, we'll pay for it and go to the little weird box where they're going to give you the game from. But I just have like so many fond memories of just poring over the back of game boxes or looking through like, you know, line after line of action figure to see if there was like the hidden good, like, all right. Let me see if they have Weapon X Wolverine hidden deep in the back behind all the Cyclopses.
Maybe it's in one of the other toy ones. Like some other kid was like, I'm coming back for this.
Yes.
So I'm going to put it behind this other one. Because I totally did that where I was like, like I remember one time like taking a slip for a game that like, you know, I was only getting one. I was like, but what if this game is sold out? Because that was also part of it. It was like you had in your mind, like I was looking at EGM. This is the game I want. I'm going to go get that slip.
Yes.
And if the papers were not there, that game was sold out.
Yeah.
Right.
And your parents were not interested in like coming back another time, finding out when the inventory was back. It was like, well, go figure out what like plan B was. Like, Ma, there ain't no plan B. Plan B is... I don't know. I guess I'm going to have to sit here for a while and figure out what plan B is because I'm not leaving here without a video game. That's not plan B. Like,
yep.
It was weird.
Lots of like, weird games that way. True Lies, the video game for SNES, let me tell you.
Or it was the instance where not all games are uniformly priced in the way that, like, we sort of think about. I mean, obviously, there's a price distribution happening now, digitally. But, like, you know, at a certain point, it became like, oh, games are, you know, that was a big deal during the Xbox 360 when they were, like, raising the price $10 because there was a certain uniformity in terms of what you expected to pay for a video game. Well, shit, like, during the especially the SNES and the N64 era, like, during the cartridge era, like, that shit wildly varied based on how much RAM was inside each of those carts. Oh, yeah. And I remember specifically, RPGs were priced out higher because they were tend to be longer games and use more of that stuff, or had a Mode 7 chip. Like, I remember not being able to get Super Mario RPG because that game cost $10 more. My mom was like, you're not getting that. And it was like $79 or something like that. Like, it was like some of those games were fucking expensive. And the only way you found that out was going down that aisle, looking at that slip, and mom wagging her head and saying, "That sorry, you're not getting that game." And I was like, okay.
Yeah, I mean, that was a weird thing during that time was it's not even just the pricing, but also, like, the – I didn't read video game magazines until, like, a little later on. So when I was, like, 8 or 9, it was 100% that box art. Like, right. It was 100%, like, okay, this looks good, or I saw it somewhere, or I saw, like, a cool commercial for it. I was a dumb child. Like, I had no actual real sense of like, oh, this is going to be good, or this won't be good. I mean, game rentals also sort of played into this, and I definitely did a lot of, you know, I would rent a game, and then later I'd be like, no, I want to buy that one, you know, for Christmas or for my birthday, basically. Like, I got games on Christmas and my birthday.
You had the time for me. The thing that's like so different now is the thing that's different is, like, in a weird way, game rentals are would make sense now because you would just have your save on your system.
Right.
But at the time, I would rent games like RPGs and, like, put in 20 hours or whatever. And then
buy save.
I bought, you know, my mom.
Someone's going to pick up where you left off.
Yeah, exactly. And, like, oh, I guess I got this game for my birthday. And that means now I'm going to start completely over. But that was an opportunity, you know, that was an opportunity to see stuff you didn't see the first time.
Did you ever do the thing where you, like, you'd already, like, extended the loan and, like, paid some late fees and you had to return it. You go back, but you're, like, giving it a day so you can check it out again. And you're just like, I hope my save's still there. I hope it survives. And, like, a lot of times it didn't. Like, if you were playing something that was, like, new, a lot of times, like, that was gone. But occasionally I would be, you know, at the end of the week, it's time for my next game rental. And I'd be like, okay, maybe I'll be in luck and I'll get my copy again.
Right, right. Or has it slipped away? Have you gone in hoping to find it again, only to see that it's gone, or worse, it's back, but it's a different cartridge, or someone deleted your save.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are the days.
I had this instance where, because I was really into video games as a kid, and, you know, so I was usually getting things earlier just because I was, like, more, like, hip to it and aware when, like, things are being released, and, like, pushing that on, like, my birthdays and coordinating on Christmas and stuff like that. And a lot of my friends were into games, it just kind of came later, or, like, I would be the guinea pig where it's like, okay, what are the cool games? Like, all right, I'm gonna make sure I go get those. And, like, my parents get around to getting me, like, a SNES. And when my best friend down the street, his parents like, all right, we're like, we're gonna upgrade, we're gonna get a SNES. Like, let's go to wherever it was to get it. You know, they wanted Super Mario World to go with that game, but they didn't have Super Mario World at the store. Like, it was not the bundle. Like, it was like the console was coming. So I don't know what the deal was, but all I know is we got there and you just couldn't get Super Mario, and you couldn't leave without a game. And so we were faced with, like, trying to figure out, like, from the scrap heap, like, what game do we go home with? And it was actually this really amazing moment where my friend just ended up randomly picking out Mystical Ninja, like, a fucking amazing Super Nintendo game, which is also, like, two-player and, like, co-op. Like, it was, like, we fell in love with that franchise, but I never would have ever thought to have played it or picked it out because, like, I was usually going on, like, what was getting the highest scores in like, EGM. And I'm sure they liked Mystical Ninja, but it was not, like, was hyped up tense, in the same way. Yeah. And, like, instead my friend Dan went home with Mystical Ninja, and oh, my God, like, that, like, a game, like, defined a lot of, like, our months later of us trying to bust through that game. So that was actually an instance where, like, these days kids don't have to worry about, like, a lack of product, right? Like, I mean, maybe if you're going for the collector's edition, but like you go to the GameStop and they're out of whatever. Okay, we'll just go download it on PlayStation Network. There's always an option to get the game where like what was so different about that era was like literally sometimes you just couldn't get the game. And it might be months. Like there were back during the SNES and the N64, like if they misjudged the popularity of a game, like Toys R Us would, I remember, tell me, like, actually, like, we don't know when that game will be back in stock. Like, they said it could be next week, it could be next month, it could be a couple months from now. And sometimes it was a couple of months before, like, carts showed up. So it's like I would end up spending my time, like, calling individual stores, like, trying to game out when, like, cartridges were coming in because the distribution was not even. It was not like, oh, it's Tuesday, like, new carts are coming in. It was just a weirder time. That it's better now. Like that was bad. Like I may be nostalgic for it because there was a certain excitement of like calling a place like they got it. Like Ghostbusters like we got one. And, like mom was getting the car. Like this Funko Land that's a little bit further than you want to go that has a copy of whatever. And it's just a different time. Now it's like, hey, you want to play Fortnite on mobile? You sign up and hope you get picked out of a lottery that you can play it early.
Oh my God,
whenever that game launches, like you're gonna be able to download Fortnite on mobile.
Right.
Yeah, and there was also the aspect of like if you had to haggle with like the surly teenager to like hold your copy. Like especially if it was like a weird
they weren't supposed to set it aside.
Wait, you were the surly teenager though, right?
Uh-huh. Did you ever help a kid like you were in high school, right? So like hang on to a copy of Crash Bandicoot or something?
I actually never had to do that. So I only worked in the game department for like a week.
Time you get used to some post 9/11 realities.
Yeah. Well, oh my God. I mean, the GameCube thing was definitely a thing. But I remember actually, like, God. I remember
were you there
it being
for a launch. Then
I was not working on launch day, but I remember launch day. I went to launch day myself as an employee of the store. Like,
did you get preferential treatment?
No, not at
us
all.
Us out there? Oh, okay. I was going to say, I'm about to get angry at you.
I had to take a number. My mom, like, coordinated an offensive for that. Like, it was a military operation. Like, we had three stores within, like, sort of a driving range, like, whatever. Like scoped out. She had
We use Luigi dicks now for length distances.
So it was like within three Luigi dicks, you know, there were three stores within the three dick distance, as we can call it, 3D, 3DD, as we call it.
That's what 3D means. Okay. Yep, that's
Avatar 2 is going to be weird.
Yeah, it's going to a lot of alien dong is what that movie is going to be about. It's going to be really good. Also, do you think Luigi's dick is green? We could talk about that later.
What? Wait.
My mom
is green. Wait. What?
I don't know.
He's not Yoshi.
I mean, what if he is? And that's why he jumps so much higher. Think about it.
Think he does do the wait.
But he's definitely shaved a little mustache into.
Oh my God!
He super has! Oh my God! And look at his nose; it looks exactly like that. That's what it looks like.
But wait, does Yoshi do the running jump the same way Luigi does?
A little. I mean, it's similar. He kind of has a little.
In what's the baby Mario one?
Yoshi's Island.
Yeah.
Doesn't he do the little like kick off and then like hover run?
Yes, I'm
and
saying.
Doesn't Luigi do that in Mario 2?
They jump similarly, is what I'm saying here.
Oh fuck! You're
gonna
crack this
whole case
open. I think
Luigi is a Yoshi and he has a green dick. I think that's what I'm saying here. Anyway, within the 3DD realm, my mom had like talked to the manager at each store to ensure like what the process would be. And she picked, like, my dad was
in
one car.
That's a very good mom thing, by the way.
My girlfriend at the time, it was, like, my first girlfriend. I was 17. She and I were at one store. My mom was at one store. My dad was at another store. And she coordinated the whole thing. And this is, like, early cell phone days. Like, people had cell phones in 2001. Oh, but it wasn't, like,
texting. You had to actually get on the phone.
You had to get on the phone. People did not text. So, like, you had to get on the phone. And my Toys R Us that I worked at actually had sort of like the best system. She had the most faith in that system because the guy there actually like cared about, you know, order and organizing things and like gave people paper numbers to like, you know, you could sit and wait in your car, but you had a specific number and we got a GameCube. So I went out for that offensive and then I got a GameCube that Christmas. It was very nice. I'm sorry, this story went very long. But
yeah. No, that's a war story. That's a worthy, you know, memory to have.
You know,
for me, the toy store was for toys. Like, because again, like PC games.
Oh, right.
There were two avenues for that. Right. One was like EB Games. Mm. The other one was, and this was kind of, this probably should have been a sign of what was to come. My favorite place to get video games was actually this huge, I don't remember what the name of the catalog was, but you get these little newsprint like catalogs full of
like one of those like PC CD games. Like CD things like
sure,
send
sure,
away
sure. And so you'd have to like call in and like give them your item number, but it like had everything, like stuff that like if I had been like thinking about a game since reading about it in the 1995 PC Gamer holiday issue
right
and I never got around
God,
to it.
That issue was so good. I was so excited for that because it was so big. Oh, it's literally like, I don't know if it was good, but it was enormous.
They were huge.
I thought you were joking, Patrick. I didn't know that you were reading I didn't know you were reading that mag.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I was. I was deep into PC games.
Gotcha.
For a number of years, and then fell out of it, like high school, college.
Gotcha.
And then didn't get back into it until like 5 years ago.
So, yeah. Right. So like years could pass, and you could still get those games, but now they'd be cheap because basically you're ordering from like a clearing warehouse, and then it would show up, you know, sometime later. And so that was how I was starting to consume games. It was like my version of Steam deals, right?
Right.
oh, nice.
That also meant that like the toy store was just for toys. And so like what I started to get into was this was my favorite shit when I was like this was the last line of toys I got into before like I sort of put the childish things away and embraced my life as a future games journalist.
Yeah.
But the toy store was where they kept the sweet micro machines.
Oh, fair. Yes.
Like, those were real good miniatures. Like, you like Star Wars shit? They've got, like, that is a perfect looking TIE fighter. Like, go play with those.
Those were the only micro machines I got into. I was very much a Hot Wheels kid. Like, Hot Wheels or bust.
Micro machines all the way.
Micro machines are so small. Like, they're so micro.
That was what
I get
made
it.
Them awesome.
That makes them cool. I appreciated a micro machine.
And they're decently scaled. Like, I loved their fucking post-Desert Storm, rah-rah American imperialism. Like, you want, like, realistic, God. Like, M1 Abrams tanks and dudes in, like, desert camo. And all, I was like, hell yeah, I do.
Which, like, I mean, I think that specifically speaks to some of the weirdness around the, like, nostalgia of this part of our lives. Because, like, the thing that made all of that so good in terms of, like, feel and experience is a sort of naivety of, like, oh, the world is simple. I want this cool tank toy. I am, like, so excited to go to, like, basically, like, there isn't a version of Toys R Us in my life anymore. There's nothing in my life where I'm like, yo, I'm going to walk in this place and it's going to be surrounded with shit I want. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. As an adult.
Just across the Williamsburg Bridge, there is a Radical bookstore.
Okay, fair. But even the Radical bookstore probably has some shit where I'd be like, nah, this shit's stupid. Like, I hate this. This is bad. You know what I mean, right? That there is, like, a degree of kind of like empty consumerism that is allowed to be empty because you don't fucking know any better, or like not even empty. It's like you can get excited for the stuff that in retrospect feels like weird propaganda. And I definitely don't miss it in the sense that like I know I'm a more complete adult now, but there is something about that feeling that is like, oh, okay. Like now that I'm a little more conscious of the world, like that's just gone, you know?
Yeah. And there's part of this that, like, I'm connecting back to, like, Ready Player One, because I'm sorry to keep quoting people on Twitter, but hey, you know, sometimes people are really smart on Twitter, but Andy McClure tweeted something really interesting and smart on Twitter about Ready Player One, and uh-huh. that, like, at the time, you know, in 2009, at the time when it came out, there was, like, a tiny subset of the population, and I was part of this, I will admit this, that, like, there was a time where the weird nostalgia of finally being able to buy all your toys was cool. Like, uh-huh. oh, I'm an adult with a job now.
Right. Right.
Which I was. I was 25 or whatever and had my first, like, full-time job after grad school and was like, you can actually buy all the games you want now. You can buy all the nerdy stuff. You can watch all the TV shows. You can now, you know, you can buy DVDs of Star Trek and all the nerdy right. things that you thought were the coolest shit in the world. When you were a kid, when you were a teenager, when you couldn't afford to buy those things or they weren't readily available, is now something you could actually just indulge in and go for. And that was like the appeal of Ready Player One, at least to
totally.
This subset of the population that I totally like belong to. And this is all tying in a little bit to like, there's a nostalgia for the, like you were saying, Patrick, there's almost a nostalgia for the, for not having everything you want or not having access to everything you want all the time, right?
There are advantages to like having focus, right? In the same way that, like, that's a lot of it being an adult is like you have a plethora of choice, and it's suddenly like then you're seeking focus, like you're looking for ways to like zero in on something because you do have like unlimited choice, and that's only changed in our own media diets. And there was something it's not just nostalgic. I think there was something important about like focus that is lost when you have, you know, you can do basically anything you want.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah, and there's like a there's a lot of the choice paralysis aspect of it too, right? Like when you have I'm paraphrasing, but the studies about like, oh, when you have 27 flavors of potato chip, you're actually less happy than when there were one or what, you know, that whole idea. And I think that is a real thing with games as well. Like it I certainly have it whenever I'm not, you know, playing something specifically for work or whatever. I sit there and I look at my 500 games and I'm like, I don't know. Instead of when I was a kid and there were 3 games a year, and also I was like a Nintendo kid, so once the N64 era came, there were 3 games a year.
There were two at that point.
Right? Yeah, exactly. And like I played everything and loved the shit out of it, whether it was a piece of crap or not. You know, it was a wonderful time. Video game time was a wonderful time. And I'm not saying that, oh, things were better back then, not by any means, but I do think there is that sort of aspect of choice paralysis and also like nostalgia for, oh, there was only a few things, but they were amazing because probably because there were only a few things, right?
Well, that's what makes it, it's been really interesting. You know, my daughter's a little over a year and a half, and she's growing into a world that she will always have unlimited choice. There will never be any sort of distribution problem for anything she wants to engage with in any sort of media. And yet, like at the age that she's at, all I'm looking for is for her to connect with anything at all. And it's weird because like she gets so excited when she hears like the opening jingle to Coco. Like Coco is her current obsession. It's an extremely good movie. Like it's really well done. Everyone should go see it. But like, it when she jumps up and down and screams and gets so excited when she sees like the Minions, like on some level it's like like it feels a little bit gross. On the other hand, I'm like, yo, I can go do the dishes. And like it's just like very strange part, like especially given that we talk a lot about like consumerism and branding and like corporate behavior and like how that like intermingles with propaganda. And yet at the same time, like when you're a parent and you're trying to find ways to both like engage / distract your kid, and there's often like an intermingling of like when you're doing one or the other, and sometimes it's both. The way that then ties into different corporate agendas that is often unavoidable, it's weird. It's just like I don't like come down on it one way or the other. It's more just like a weird thing that like I'm excited for my kid when they're excited for something,
right?
But then it's totally. Like you step back and go, oh, they're excited for the Illumination logo because she has watched all of the Secret Life of Pets and all the and all these other movies that are made by this company. So now she knows that before the Illumination logo is the Universal Studios logo because she has watched the Minion movies that many times, and she's getting excited for Minions, but she's getting excited for Minions and get because a corporate logo is coming before that. There is something weird about that, even if it's not inherently evil from what it means for her. But there is like. It's still, I watch it sometimes and go, huh, Even if, like, ultimately there's not much I can do about it.
Every once in a while, I have just, like, the strongest, like, memory, like, very, very, very strong memories of, like, that sort of being a kid and being excited over something ridiculous. And in retrospect, being like, my dad must have thought that I was just so, just so ridiculous. Just such a little kid who didn't know shit about shit. Or they're like, my mom really put up with some bullshit for me, you know, that sort of stuff. But at the same time, the thing that they did was also, and it sounds like the thing that you're excited to do with Jessica, is like lean, like look for that thing that is actually exciting for the kid and like, like figure out how to make that a really healthy and positive thing. So like for me, like my parents knew I love video games. My parents knew I love the X-Men and like comics and superheroes and stuff. And so they like figured out how to make those really productive things. Like very much were into me reading comics because it meant reading, you know, and it meant like, and not just like into me reading comics, like, okay, go, you can, you're allowed to read comics. Like, would ask me questions about the comics that I liked, would ask me about who my favorite characters were and what they did, and not just like what their superpowers were, but like, tell me about Storm. Like, you know, tell me about Storm. Like, what's up with Storm? And that like helped me.
Engaging with comprehension.
Totally. Yeah. Because like, if I have to explain to somebody why I like something, like, yes, it's going to start with Storm has dope weather powers. You know what I mean? But also it's going to be like, well, Storm has, you know, has this situation where she was a goddess in Africa and like blah 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 blah, and then like she has these responsibilities, but also like she's trying to like community, you know, help the mutant community across the world, and like, and that suddenly there is more there. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like it's finding, like, realizing like you can't teach a kid like the problems of corporate America, like, and some, and the way that media is delivered. And it's just the way it is. So it's like finding silver linings in that. And right. It's like, okay, this is the situation. Like, my kid is going to be into what they're into. I can only guide it for so much. Otherwise, like, it's just not – there's only so much control you have as a parent. So then how do you, like, find a way to, like, yeah, like, exactly that. Like, and mind comprehension, like, mind interest, like, encourage reading. It's like,
yes.
Like, that's why it's, you know, that's how my parents often dealt with, like, my interest in video games was like – oh, like, he's playing a lot of these RPGs. There's a ton of, like, reading.
There's words like, in those.
Yeah, it's like, okay, like, you know, they didn't necessarily – so, like, your parents maybe engaged with it a little more than my parents did. But, like, it was also true when I would hear from it later where, like, that's how they would talk about it amongst themselves. Of, like, well, he's reading, like, essentially, right. like, six novels when he's playing these games. Like, okay, like, that there are worse things for him to be doing.
Right, right. The other thing really quick is just, like – to get really briefly to your point, Patrick, there is going to be a time, like, unless you're homeschooling your kids, there is going to be a time when they are exposed to these things in school. And the choice is very much like, how, like, do you let that be the only place where they get that exposure? Or do you engage with it also as a parent and, like, try to dig into it and try to, like, actually be the locus of that stuff, because otherwise it's just going to happen behind closed doors and you're just like not going to fucking know, you know?
Yeah, that's the equivalent was when we were kids. One of my good friends, his mom, a very nice woman, but it was very like specific about it was basically no Beavis and Butthead was the thing at the time. And Beavis and Butthead, let me tell you, very popular amongst kids that knew they weren't supposed to watch Beavis and Butthead.
Totally.
And part of the reason all the kids would hang out at my house was it was the closest from the bus stop that we were all on. But also, my mom would let us watch Beavis and Butthead. And my mom's whole thought process was like, it's something I've taken away and I thought a lot about as, you know, how I'm going to deal with similar situations as a parent was like, just like be there and like watch it and monitor it. Like, so there was more of a situation of like, if it's going to happen, like, understand what the kids are watching and like engage with them on it. And like, there's limits to all that, right? Like, you know, and how, why they're going to let your kids go and you got to draw a line somewhere. But like, you know, but all that happened was that this mom thought like, hell yeah, like my kids aren't watching Beavis and Butthead. It's like, no, actually they're watching South Park and Beavis and Butthead around the corner.
Right.
And like, you're just pretending like you're a better parent than you are rather than sort of like fully understanding. Like, I'd rather fully understand even if it's shitty stuff, the stuff that like my kids are into, as opposed to just like pretending like I'm the superhero kid, a parent, and like they're not seeing that stuff. They're not gonna watch it on their fucking kid, their friend's iPhone when they're playing Fortnite at the lunch table.
Are you gonna try to do the thing? I've always wondered if I would do this if I ever became a parent and had, you know, a school-aged child, of like to get them out of it, pretend I love it so much that it's not cool anymore. Like, I always worry about, like, that could backfire real bad. Like, okay, my kid loves, you know, whatever, Jake Paul or Logan Paul or something. Do I, like, buy Logan Paul t-shirts and wear them around the house and be like, what's that bro doing today, kids? Like, over-enthusiastic, like, try to, like, counter-insurgency, like.
It's a very Danielle maneuver. I'm very into this. This is very good.
Or will I see through that? I don't know.
I think part of it depends on, like, the personality of your kids and, like, the relationship you have and, like, whether, like, hormones and stuff like that have kicked in, like, to where, you know, like, anti-parent sort of, like, attitudes are prevalent. Like, where maybe a counterinsurgency is not going to help and gets them to double down. Like, I don't know. But, I mean, I would hope – it actually sounds like I'd like to be something like Austin's parents where it's like you talk to them about it, like, in a way that – maybe it's not necessarily showing, like, I'm super into comics with you, too. It's more just like, what are you up to? Like, what do you think about that thing?
I care because you like care. A way that,
yeah, or just, you know, that's one way to find out what your kids think. Because if you ask your kid what they're thinking, they're probably not going to tell you. But if you can ask around the question, you know, maybe that's a more a better way to understand where your kid's head is at. I don't know. I'll report back on episode 9000 of Waypoint Radio 10 years from now.
See how that's going. Rob, do you have any amazing friends who let you watch shows that, or were you that friend? Were you that kid who got to watch all the stuff?
I saw pretty much everything, and I wasn't supposed to. Well, no, like, I mean, my dad like taught some film at a community college, right?
Sure.
Like, I mean, I was being introduced to things that there was no way, like, there was basically the dad edit of Goodfellas, for instance, which had pretty much everything. Like, I think the only thing he sort of left out were some of, like, I think where the dude they murder, Bats. I don't think, like, I saw him stabbed to death in, like, real time, but I did see it fast-forwarded. So, like, that's kind of how I grew up, is basically, like, well, we shouldn't be watching this, but, well, The Shield is pretty tough, is a pretty tough show, but it's real good. I think you get a lot out of it. Like, I mean,
awesome. everything is falling into place, Rob.
I read Cash 22 when I was, like, 11.
Oh, wow.
And my dad was like, you probably shouldn't be reading this. And then, like, I don't know, I was like, yeah, but I think I'm really into it. Like, what's going on with, you know, Snowden and all that stuff? It seems like, and he was like, oh, you're really into this. That's cool. I really want to talk to you about Catch 22. Continue reading, son.
God.
I love that, though. It seems like that would actually be a really good way of engaging intellectual curiosity and sort of, maybe you are the person you are today, Rob, because your dad was like, hey, read Catch 22 and chat with me about it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. but at the same time, like, the first, like, sexual content I ever read was literally about Italian prostitutes in occupied Italy during the war.
Oh my God, that explains one of everything whom, about Rob.
This is what I'm saying.
Yeah, this is, like, that probably wasn't the right way to handle a lot of things. Like, I'm not
Luigi's
sure,
dick.
Like, the Luciana chapter was something I needed to see when I was 11 years old.
Yeah.
I don't think I needed to see Arfi, like, kill a sex worker when I was, like, 11 years old.
Yes.
There's some bad shit that you don't know how to process. Like, I think I benefited a lot from that sort of, like, neglect in some ways, or facilitation. But I think it also taught me some lessons about, like, stick around to make sure stuff is properly contextualized.
yes, that sounds like a very good and balanced approach. So basically,
I'm gonna delete this book from Jessica's Kindle, is what you're saying.
There you go.
Whoever the contact is that goes into her eyes that allows her to read through her lenses.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's a whole other different thing, right? Is like so much of my childhood was this, like, I have so many clear memories of my dad being like, one day we're going to be able to play, like, Joe Montana football, like, with each other across the country. You'll be away at college somewhere, and there's going to be this thing called the internet. And I was like, all right, Dad, sure. And now we don't actually play Madden.
It was called SegaNet.
It was called SegaNet. That's true. That's probably what I said at the time. I was like, Dad, that exists already. It's called SegaNet. Come on. Oh, I thought you were a serious gamer.
My dad and I played Lynx together all the time for years. Like, that's we had like Lynx tournaments that's together. Very good. It was great. My dad like took him ages to learn how to mouse correctly. When he started, because like we just bought a PC, we were completely naive of it. We got a Packard Bell like 386 or something. We had to upgrade it to a VESA card to play Lynx, but my dad didn't know what to make of the mouse, and so he oriented it like it was a Ouija board. Thing and would hold it like that. Like his right thumb was the left mouse button.
Oh my god!
Yeah, and it was all like
and he would just like inverted. Move it in like big sweeps. Like
yeah, yeah.
And how'd that help his golf game?
Oh, he got real good at it. He was great. It was like those dudes with the tall putters. That was totally him. He was just like he would like perfectly align a shot and like. That thumb control, man, it was really on point. He'd be draining these like 38-foot putts down a slope, and I'd be like, "Damn!"
I'm trying the Zachney method of mouse control currently. I love it. This is it. I'm doing this from now on. I am going to start playing Fortnite. I'm going to be the best. Get ready.
That's how you construct. It's like you right. got to put your hand around the mouse that way.
Yes, exactly. God,
seems worth it.
Totally.
So the
whole point that I was trying to make before, I just realized I didn't finish my point, which is, you're right, Patrick, your kid is going to grow up and have all sorts of weird fucking technology, and it's going to be weird.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's if, you know, we're not in like a nuclear bunker, I guess, you know.
But even that, it'll be like, you're sitting there like with your like carbon scrubber, like hooked up to your HVAC unit in your house. And meanwhile, like Patrick's daughter is just going to be like, well, actually, I got a CO2 adapter for my lungs. I just drink that shit now.
Yeah,
and totally. Danielle, this is what offline modes are for. Just go into Netflix, you cue it to your actual there device, you and there then you're go. Good to go.
There it is.
True.
There
That's
it is.
True.
Yeah, I've long thought about when I felt a little bit like this when Snapchat came along. Like I understood Snapchat on like a theoretical level, but I just it didn't do anything for me like in terms of like actually engaging with the application. And I wonder like that was like the first bridge of like oh. Like, I'm old and just, like, don't even have the curiosity to figure out what this thing... Like, I know what it is, but, like, I just don't feel like engaging with it. I was like, okay, that's one marker. And, like, there is going to be similar markers, like, as a parent and child relationship. Like, where does that... Even as someone that, like, writes about technology, like, in some part, like, their job... My job will continue to be to understand on, like, a holistic level what's happening. At some point, there will be, like, some raw disconnect. And I'm wondering when that moment – it'll probably be sooner than I think, like given how quickly kids adapt to technology. I mean my daughter knows the basics of how an iPad works. She doesn't know like what to open, but like she knows how to swipe and she knows how to click on things. And at some point when does she outpace me and I sit back and go, oh, fuck. It'll happen.
Right. Soon. Right? Probably sooner than later.
Or what is the thing, this is a conversation I was having with another parent, was like, what is the thing where like I draw the line on where like a kid, like a certain generation embraces a certain technology and you, the intellectual, says, actually it's bad and you shouldn't be doing that, right? Like at some point there will be a thing that like you think as an older person, like, you know, no, that's bad for you. And I just wonder, is that like chips in the skin? Is it? I don't know what that is, but like at some point there will be some sort of line in the sand that happens to everyone. And I wonder when
Toys R Us 2, when they bring back Toys R Us, they're like, this isn't
a gritty reboot.
This isn't the real shit. Where's Jeffrey? Huh, String? Where's Jeffrey, String?
Where's Jeffrey?
Jeffrey's off trying to solve the opiate crisis.
Yeah. Listen, a giraffe has to make a living, you know?
Look, we're in the seventh term of the Trump administration. Oh, everyone else has resigned. Jeffrey the AI went in and just, he was the only one left.
The opium czar.
Jeffrey the neocon.
Children are traumatized by pictures of Don Jr. posing with Jeffrey's severed head.
Oh my god.
Oh, no!
Jesus Christ.
Oh my god!
we're loopy today. For people listening, it's been a long week here at Waypoint HQ, and I think it's showing.
It might be.
All of our divergences today.
It might be. There's Luigi's dick and Jeffrey's severed head, and you know, it's okay. It's okay. Let's go to the question bucket.
Jeffrey gave his brain over to a new startup that kills you, takes your brain, presses it away, and then...
into consciousness, not dead.
But he's dead. It'll kill you. You know, I just so you know, yeah. Full disclosure. Yeah.
Full disclosure.
Small price to pay for immortality.
You'll be dead, but immortal.
You'll be able to know what happens in Infinity War 4, and so...
Yeah.
Come on.
And in Trump's 7th term. So, you know, it'll be worth it, for sure. Austin, there's a question here that I think you'll like a lot.
Sure.
Are you ready for a question that's very Austin?
Yeah.
All right. This question is, where do mechs end in giant
robots?
We did
this. It was Monday. We did this on Monday.
You know what?
You were out. It's fine.
I'm sorry.
Cars are mechs, too. If you only listen to the Friday episode, let me tell you real quick. Cars are mechs, too.
And you're right. No, this is a different question.
Wait, really?
This isn't about cars being mechs. I was on Monday's show, and this is not about cars.
Okay, what's this one?
This one is, where do mechs end and giant robots start? Is the human pilot the machine?
This is different.
Yeah, all right. Jeez, okay. I had a moment there.
It's like an extension of a previous one, though.
It's, it's related.
It's in the same cinematic universe.
Right.
It's related.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. Would that make BT-7274 a robot and a mech? Would he only be a mech when a human is inside him and a robot when operating alone? Wait, the horse mech is a mech, so does that mean any organic controller makes it a mech, not a robot?
Mechs have to have pilots, technically. Robots can drive themselves. BT is both a mech and a robot. Okay, that's my very quick and dirty response.
What is BT from? Sorry.
Titanfall 2.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. I was like, Optimus Prime, not a mech. Optimus Prime isn't piloted, right? Optimus Prime is a robot. Which is rad. I like robots. But the word robot inside of, like, mecha and the extended mecha, like, world does also just mean giant. Like, all mechs are robots, but not all robots are mechs. The way that the fandom works. Inside of, like, the mech fandom, there are, especially in Japan and, like, associated fandoms, there's kind of a divide between types of giant robots and mechs. There are real robots, quote unquote, and there are super robots.
Okay.
Gigantor, the Pacific Rim robots are really on the line, but like, Mazinger Z, like a lot of like, I'm trying to think of what's a popular, like Big O, if you ever saw Big O, anything that like, the Power Rangers robot, super robot, right?
Okay.
That's a super robot. It's like a big, goofy, colorful, fun, you know. They can do weird shit with giant swords. They draw their power from the sun. Like, you know, very super heroic. Like more like Superman than Iron Man. Iron Man, real mech, real robot. Gundam, real robot. Battletech, real robot. They're not real robots, to be clear. Those don't really exist. But inside of the categorization, we call those real robots. I'm much more of a real robot person than a super robot person, which people think means that I'm just no fun, which is true. So that's my quick and dirty thing.
Come in here though. Is that just totally different? That's just an android.
Not all robots are sentient, right? So like, right. I don't think we have like a quick and dirty word for like the quick and dirty word for sentience is sentience. So like some robots are sentient. Mechs can be sentient, but they don't have to be. And I don't think sentience prevents them from being a mech.
Okay. Okay. Well, I'm glad we cleared that up.
So BT, mech and robot, we're good to go on that front.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm happy about that. Does anybody else have any parting thoughts about Toys R Us or mechs?
Okay.
Yeah. I'm letting there be room for Toys R Us and mechs. I'll tell one more story and then I will close it out. And that is, my mom is the greatest person ever because I was such a little tomboy and I played with pretty much exclusively boys' toys, quote unquote, Micro Machines and Legos, et cetera, et cetera. And she thought that. She once conveyed to a poor Toys R Us salesperson that she thought it was really crappy that there weren't any girls in Lego ads because they seemed like a not gendered toy. And my mom is really great. So that's a story about my mom.
Shout outs to Danielle's mom. She's a real one.
She's awesome. My mom is rad as hell. And as she would say, in her honor, I will close out the podcast with her accent. Send questions to gaming@vice.com with the subject question. Shout outs to Bowen for letting us use his track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. We're on Twitter at Waypoint. We're on Facebook at Waypoint Vice. We're on YouTube at Waypoint Vice. And everything you can read from us is at waypoint.vice.com. Austin, where can we find you online?
I'm trying to figure out what Nintendo's going to do next, because first they gave us Mario Nipples, and now they're giving us Luigi Bulge. What's third? What's coming next?
Yoshi.
What do we got?
Yoshi tongue.
No. No. Tongue all right.
Related.
I'm done.
Peace.
Patrick.
Austin_Walker on Twitter.
Patrick, where can we find you online?
You can find me at Patrick Klevick. Small aside, if you're bummed with Toys R Us because you like to go places where there are tons of toys and you like to look at them and have your kids run around, like, do a search. There are actually a surprising number of, like, little boutique homegrown toy stores, like, you know, both in the city and in the suburbs. Like, I've been shocked when I've actually taken the time to look around that, like, there are more of them than you think. And while it is certainly sad that Toys R Us is closing, if you're, like, interested in sort of keeping that sort of stuff alive in the world of e-commerce, like, go out and try and support buying stuff from your local place.
Yeah. Rob, where can we find you?
At Rob Zachney on Twitter.
Amazing. I'm at Daniela Rye, and I'd like to tell you to be good and be good at it.
Peace.
Please, God, let's go.
Let's give us peace, please.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.